This morning I'd like to talk about what we've just done here at this table and the ways in which it cannot be only for here at this table. What I'd like to share with you all this morning is the mandate that we've been given, the mandate that our way of worship become a way of life. And to do that, I'd like to tell you about a knee-jerk reaction. I'm going to first tell you about a literal knee-jerk reaction that's developed in my own life, and then I want to talk about figurative knee-jerk reactions. Some of you know that about a couple of years ago, my doctor said I was too fat and too sick, and I had to do something about it. And as I began to do something about it, one of the somethings that I began to do is to have oatmeal for breakfast every single morning. And when you put the microwave on and you put the oatmeal in the microwave, other order, of course, you put the oatmeal in first, you turn on the microwave, and it's 5 minutes until my oatmeal is ready. And so as I stood there for those 5 minutes for the first week or so, I realized that was 5 minutes I could be doing something. And so what I began to do is to march. So every morning when I would put my oatmeal in the microwave and set the timer, the second that I pushed the button, I began to march. And for 5 minutes, every single morning I would march. I would march my way down the hall back into the bedroom and watch Good Morning America or CNN. I would march until I heard the beeper on the microwave. Now, some of you know that in the last couple of months, I've been having some neurological trouble, and I've not been able to walk as easily as before. And so I decided to stop marching when my oatmeal was in the microwave. But the funniest thing happened. After 2 years of marching, every single time I pushed the button on the microwave for my oatmeal, I couldn't stop. I found myself walking into the kitchen, putting the oatmeal in the bowl, opening the microwave, and thinking to myself, I'm not marching, it's hard to walk today. And the second I pushed the button, what happened? A knee-jerk reaction. Every morning for 2 weeks, even though I said to myself, I'm not going to march today, my knee immediately went up as if I were going to march. Knee-jerk reactions are those things that happen just because. We don't think about them. We respond in a certain way. For me, my knee-jerk reaction was literal. My knee literally jerked up because of the habit that I had established. But I want to talk about some other knee-jerk reactions. Sometimes, all too often, I fear, when things happen in our lives that frighten us, we react with fear, and we turn away from one another. And we close doors that should be opened, and we forget faith that should be strong, and we say things that we really don't mean to say. One of the reasons I think that Jesus gave the Last Supper and shared with his disciples is that he wanted to instill within them a way of being, a way of life. He wanted them to have something to share, and when they shared that something, that they would think about what it meant to be his disciples, what it meant that he had given of himself for the world, and what it would mean for them to give of themselves to the world. So every Sunday, every time we gather here, we share at this table. We break these loaves and we drink from these cups and we say to one another, there is plenty for all and all are welcome, none are excluded. We do it again and again and again and again, hopefully, so that it becomes for us not just a way of worship, but a way of life. And in today's world, we need ways of life that share with one another, ways of life that are based on faithfulness, ways of life that do not turn inwardly, but that reach outwardly. Why is that? Well, let me tell you a story. There's all kinds of trouble in the Middle East Country after country is experiencing difficulty, and frankly, people are frightened. Not just in the Middle Eastern countries, but around the world. People are scared. They're not sure what to do. People go to bed not knowing what will happen overnight, because some people, in the name of faithfulness, have done very unfaithful things, and violence has been the way in which that has come into the world. And so there's this couple. There's this couple, and they've got a young child, and they're scared to death, and they don't know what to do because they've heard that a despot, in the name of faith and order, is going to kill people mercilessly, senselessly. And this couple prays to God. They listen for the voice of God. They're not sure what to do. Finally, they decide that they're going to leave. They're going to leave the place where they are so that they can avoid the violence, so that this ruthless killer might not destroy their family. And they pick up, full of faith, and they leave their home. They go to seek refuge. As they cross border after border, knowing that they're running away from the only thing they've ever known, they're afraid of what might happen, but they're sure that there must be a better life in another place. And what they finally do is cross over the border into a superpower nation, a nation that has been in control of so much real estate for so long, and they're thankful. They were refugees, but they were taken in. They were taken in. And they lived. And the terror, after a while, went away, and this family was eventually able to resettle in their homeland. Well, let me stop telling. Let me just read it from the book that I have here. Now, after they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated. He sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more. When Herod died, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are seeking the child's life are dead." Then Joseph got up and took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in the place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And after being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee. There he made his home in a town called Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled. He will be called a Nazarene. Mary, Joseph, Jesus, refugees. Mary, Joseph, Jesus, refugees. Every time we gather in this place and we speak the name of Jesus, we give thanks to God that he grew to become a man, to break bread, to share with his disciples, to send us into the world so that our way of worship could be a way of life. So that it would be a knee-jerk reaction for us that whenever we had bread, we would break it and share it in the name of God. So that whenever we shared a cup, We would drink it and share it in the name of God. We do this because, thanks be to God, a refugee family was welcomed in a superpower nation. Egypt was ruled by Rome at that time, the greatest superpower of their time. And they were nurtured and cared for. No one said to them, "I'm sorry, you'll have to go back and take your chances with Herod. We're not accepting refugees today." What we have in our text is, when there was terror all around, God cared about every person, and a family that we're paying attention to in the story were able to emigrate from their place, to immigrate to a new place as refugees. Now I want to talk to you about a knee-jerk reaction I've witnessed in the last week. We talked last Sunday about the terror attacks in Paris. And my guess is, if you're like me, you're frightened. You're frightened because more and more and more it seems like terrorists will go anywhere and go to any length to harm people. My guess is, if you're like me, you're thinking, if it can happen in this city or that city or the next city, and it keeps on happening, is anyone safe anywhere? My guess is, if you're like me, you're thinking to yourself, maybe we'd all just be safer if we could go inside and lock our doors and keep other people out, even people who are also afraid, even people who are also suffering. But my hope is, if you're also like me, that you've been trained for years and years and years to sacrificially follow the one who says to us that we're called to love and serve all of humanity. What I've watched this week with sadness is the knee-jerk reaction of many Americans and many American politicians saying, "It's too scary, we can't take it. We're going to say that all of those people who are threatened, who are frightened, and who are suffering, who are leaving Syria, will not be welcome in our nation, will not be welcome in our states, will not be welcome in our communities, will not be welcome in our homes." I just couldn't sleep anymore Wednesday night as I was thinking about it. And so I got up at 2 a.m. and I prayed. And then I did what I always do after I get up. I came here. So here I was at 2:20 a.m. Wednesday morning, thinking about all of you, thinking about this table, thinking about the refugees, Mary, Joseph, Jesus, Moses, Miriam, Joshua, Karl Ueblauer, my grandfather, who was a World War I refugee who came in 1917 through Ellis Island, hoping to escape the ravages of the war. Others who saw themselves as refugees, members of my family as well, Francis Cook and his son John, and Sarah Warren, passengers on a refugee boat called the Mayflower. And I thought of all the refugees leaving Syria whose names I do not know, and I did these things. I prayed for all of us that we, even though we're afraid, I'm afraid. My daughter sent me a text yesterday. This was the text. "Dad, I just purchased my 20-day Eurorail pass for my trip to Europe in January. I'm afraid." In the midst of our fear, we are asked by our God to be courageous. To have heart. You know, the word courage comes from the word for heart. Being courageous means to have heart, to bring your heart into a situation of fear. We are called to be the people of the open table, people who say, everyone is welcome here. God loves us, therefore we are required. We are required to love others as part of the way in which we love our God. We have tokens of openness and sharing around this table today. I say just tokens because if all this congregation did was one time a year send a few boxes of stuffing to people who don't have enough to eat, that would be silly, wouldn't it? But these 20 wonderful Thanksgiving meals are going out as a part of what we do in the world, as a token of who we're called to be by God. This open table is a part of what we do in the world, a token of what we're called to be by God. The next thing that I did by about 3 o'clock a.m. was to pray on refugees in the world and refugees that I was aware of, and I began to look at this text of Jesus, the refugee. And I began to wonder what my life and life's calling would look like had he been killed by Herod, had Egypt not taken him in. I didn't like what I saw. Then I wrote a few letters. I wrote one to our president. I wrote one to our governor. I wrote one to our Missouri senators. I wrote one to my state representative. I wrote one to my federal representative. I wrote one to my Missouri senator. And in each of those letters, I reminded them of the Christian story by which I live my life. I let them know that I understand they're afraid. And I reminded them that we elected them to lead us with courage. And I told them that I would encourage you this morning to pray for them. So here I go. Sisters and brothers, people of God, if you are afraid, if you're not sure what public policy should be, if you are uncertain about whether we're safe in this world anymore, I am with you. But I ask you as people of faith to pray for our elected leaders that somehow they will find courage in their hearts, that somehow they'll remember their own faith traditions, that somehow they'll remember the tradition of these United States. A country that has in one of its greatest harbors a statue named Liberty, at the base of which is a welcome. And it says not, bring me your billionaires, bring me your people who have been thoroughly vetted, bring me your people who are just like me. It says instead, bring all the folks who are having the roughest time wherever they are. It seems to me that if what we say and do at this table stays at this table, then we will be a people of closed doors. We will be a city of closed doors, a state of closed doors, and a nation of closed doors. But if what happens at this table, the sacrificial breaking, sharing, and giving of love and hope, then we will become a people of open arms, in a city of open arms, in a state of open arms, in a world with open arms. And here's the most important part. It is not going to be, and it never has been, easy. Sometimes people say, well, if Jesus were here today, I would really love him. I'd follow him everywhere. I'd do just whatever he said we should do. People must have been saying that in Jesus' time as well. People must have been saying that when Matthew was writing his gospel, because at the end of Matthew's gospel, he has Jesus telling folks, at the end of time, when the Son of Man comes, people are going to be lined up, and I'm going to say to them, whenever you took care of sick people and poor people and sad people and hungry people and thirsty people, you were taking care of me. And the people are going to say, gosh, Lord, if I'd known it was you, I would have done something. So there Jesus was, right at the Last Supper. It seems from the way the gospel is told that Jesus knows this is the last time he's going to be eating with his disciples before he's arrested and crucified. They seem not to know that. But while they're participating in this meal, while he's teaching them that he is sharing his life with them and they are to share their lives with the world, he says to them, by the way, you're all going to fall away. What he says to them is, stumbling is going to be a fact of life for you. And of course, they all protest. They're all around the table, and it seems so nice, and Jesus is there, and there's bread, and there's a cup, and there are prayers, and they all say, I will never fall away. And Jesus says, yes, you will. And he goes out, and he prays, and they fall asleep, and he's arrested, and they all fall away. Peter hangs in there for a little longer, but he doesn't even make it till the cock crows three times. What Jesus was saying to them was, stumbling is a fact of life. Sometimes our knee-jerk reaction will be to fall away from our faith. But Jesus also says, I call you to this table again and again and again. Because even though stumbling is a fact of life, it should not for you be a way of life. The way of life to which we are called is to courageously, lovingly, with great risk, open our doors, open our homes, open our lives. This is where we come to practice our habits, so that we can have new knee-jerk reactions. The reason that we eat at this table week in and week out is so that when you're at other tables and when you're surrounded by resources in your life, your knee-jerk reaction will be to break bread to share with others. Oh, a table. I know what we do at tables. Everyone is welcome and everyone is invited and we all share. Oh, a cup. I know what we do with cups. We thank God and then we share it with everyone around. Oh, look, bread. I know what we do with bread. We give great thanks, and we break it and distribute it because everyone needs to have some. Oh, look, Jesus. I know what Jesus calls us to. Living a life of courageous, sacrificial loving and giving. We practice at this table so that we can live beyond this room. I'm so thankful that we're going to have an opportunity today to practice again around other tables. As we sit down to share a meal of Thanksgiving, and by the way, can you smell inhale right now? You might smell turkeys cooking. We're going to do that not just as Christians today. We're going to do it with others that we've invited and welcomed to be in our midst. We've invited Muslims. We've invited Jews. We've invited Baha'i. We will sit down and share together as God's people. So I pray for each one of us, and I ask you to please pray for me, because it's so easy to, out of fear, have the knee-jerk reaction of excluding people. People who are running away from war and terror. People who are running away out of fear. People who need some place to run to. As we thank God for providing for us, we must remember that God provides for the entire earth. Ali Doran, who spoke to us this morning during our Sunday school hour from the Niagara Foundation, mentioned one of the most important people as he thinks about what it means to be human beings. He mentioned Adam from the Bible. Adam. Did you know we're all connected to Adam? Adam and Eve, the first parents of humanity, right? We tell that story of how humanity began so that we can kind of trace our roots back to Adam and Eve. I just want to let you all know, I've probably told you this before, but whatever genealogical work you've done is probably not as good as the genealogical work my family has done. I mentioned the Mayflower earlier. We got back all the way back to 1620. That's pretty good. But my great-grandmother, in her very latest years, went farther back than that. One year at Thanksgiving, you may remember me telling you this story, I saw that she had gone back all the way to the 1200s in England. And then the records sort of gave out. And so in her ancient spidery scrawl, the last pages of this book of genealogy hold this long sentence. And then on and on through mothers and fathers from various places and nations, all the way back to our first parents, Adam and Eve. Thanks, Grandma. Grandma traced our family all the way back to Adam and Eve. If you can beat that, see me after worship. Of course, her point was this. It doesn't do me any good to talk about my family if I forget that we're a human family. It doesn't do us any good to pray over and break and bless and share this bread unless we believe that God is the God of all the earth. It doesn't do us any good to sing songs of freedom, to speak words of thanksgiving, and to say that we find our courage in God if our hearts aren't willing to risk by opening our arms to others. Now, I'm not naive. I told our congresspeople and our president and our governor as much. I wrote this line, "I understand that there are abundant security issues and questions." There are, aren't there? And in the midst of those abundant security issues and questions, we are called as people of faith to step forward with open arms, courageous hearts, and peaceful, loving minds and deeds, so that what happens at this table can happen outside of those doors. Please pray for our leaders. Please pray for our families. Please pray for me, that we can all have the courage to love humanity in the way that we've been taught to love humanity, that we can find the strength to reach out and care for those in need, that we can endure the risk that Jesus has asked us to endure, and that we might come back again and again and again to this table to give thanks, to be filled, and to continue to learn the way of life to which Christ calls us. Amen.